Welcome to the Snowfighters Institute podcast, featuring conversations with leaders in professional snow and ice management about what's working, what's challenging, and what matters most in our industry. Here's your host, Phil Harwood.
All right, welcome back, Snowfighters. My name is Phil Harwood, and I am joined today by my special guest, Joel Wallum, from the great state of Minnesota, St. Cloud, Minnesota, and his company is the Emerald Companies. Thank you for being here, Joel.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
I've been chasing you for a while to get you on here, but it's winter and you've had some snow, and it snows up in Minnesota, I'm told.
Once in a while.
Well, I'm real excited to have you as my guest and to have you on this podcast to expose what you do to the company, because I think you have a unique situation with your company and just the way you're set up. And I like the way you run your business. Obviously, you and I have got to know each other over the last few years. You've been to some of the Snowfighter events. Thank you for being a regular participant. So we'll talk a little bit about Snowfighters. We'll talk about your company. We'll talk about the industry. But before we do all that, I really want to get to know you a little bit, or have our listeners get to know you a little bit about in terms of your background. How does somebody get into the business from coming out of high school? Like, what was your environment growing up? Were you running equipment when you were a kid? What attracted you to this business, and how did you get here?
I guess I'll start. I grew up in a small town. My father had a dairy farm. And he was also a truck driver, so he drove for the Star and Tribune, which is a newspaper here in Minnesota. And he would work for them, and then he'd come home and work at the farm. And then I had a brother. He's 10 years older than I am. He was taking over the farm, and him and his wife were growing the dairy and doing a bunch of stuff there. So as I was growing up, obviously, when he was in his 20s and doing all this, I was 10 years old, and I was kind of a thorn in his side, and I was sneaking out of the equipment and driving tractors, and I'd take the push mower and mow underneath things, and thinking I was, you know, doing a service to the farm to make things look clean. He chased me around once in a while, beat me up here and there, but you know, I survived. But yeah, I definitely got anxious to want to do the equipment side of things. With him taking over, I kind of realized early on, you know, 15, 16, 17 years old, that probably wasn't an option for me. So I kind of went out and explored, and I got a job at a newspaper company. I ran a newspaper press for about 8 years, and that was nights and evenings, and wasn't super excited about that. Got a friend that lives in Kansas City, and he does handyman work and contracting. And he kind of put a bug in my ear to do handyman work. So I hung up some flyers at the senior center here in St. Cloud. And they a lot of the widows would call and ask if I mow grass. And that happened more than not. And so I went on and bought myself a $100 Toro push mower from a garage sale, and started push mowing lawns for the widows. And I mean, of course, you know, I was charging $20 an hour and making money. And I was like, that was more than I was making at my full-time job. And started doing more and more things. I had one of the ladies contact me and said, have you ever built a retaining wall? I need some retaining walls built. And I didn't even know how to spell retaining wall. I mean, but I figured it out. We didn't have YouTube back then. This was back in 1997, 96, somewhere in there. And I got it figured out. I got hooked in with a local nursery. They coached me along and helped me. And the owner of the nursery said, we have a lawn care company that we're looking to get out of. Is that something you're interested in? So I called in to work sick that day and mowed lawn with them for a day, and I fell in love with it instantly. From there, bought the business from them, started mowing grass. I still have one of my original accounts from 28 years ago when I started.
Really?
Mowing.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And the winter came, obviously, and tried to figure out snow removal. I had bought myself a two-wheel drive Chevrolet half-ton pickup. And I went to the local farmer dealership and bought a Cup Cadet tractor, snowblower combination. Mm-hmm. And I was going to do driveways. So I contacted some of the residential customers I had and, you know, said, hey, can I blow your driveway off and clean your driveway off? And didn't really plan ahead very well. My thoughts were that I'd put this tractor in the back of my truck, drive around. That way I'd have weight for the two-wheel drive and I could get from place to place. Well, on those little tractors, the snowblower does not lift high enough to drive the ramps to get in the back of the truck. So I'd have to put the tractor in cruise control and stand in front of the snowblower and lift it up. And then as the tractor climbed up the ramps, I'd get down and slide out from under the side. And then I'd let the tractor drive the rest of the way up the ramp. So I did that like 15 times every snowstorm. Knew I needed a trailer. And from there on out, snow removal started for me and Emerald.
Mm-hmm. So that's amazing. That is amazing.
That's kind of how it got started.
You know, you've never told me that story before.
Nope.
And we actually should talk about our printing press backgrounds, because I have one as well. Yeah. So that's cool. Not atypical. You know, we hear that type of progression a lot in the industry, where, you know, someone's starting out as a kid and just working in the neighborhood, and you know, you just take one job and it leads to the next and it leads to the next, and you figure it out and you buy more stuff, and all of a sudden you have employees and you go. So when did it become like an official business? Is that when you bought the lawn care business from the nursery?
Yep. So I started kind of doing all this stuff in 1997 and 98. Mm-hmm. Officially in January of 1998, I made my LLC. At that time, it was called Emerald Lawn Care. Isn't everything something lawn care when we get started?
Mm-hmm, sure.
So that's how it started. And just kind of grew from there. I did it preliminary by myself for the first year. My wife and I, we rented an apartment, excuse me. And we bought a house that summer. And once we bought the house, then I was able to quit my job because we wanted to mm-hmm. make sure we get financing for the house. I was told, being new in business, that would be hard to do. By that fall, we had quit our jobs, or I had quit my job, and she kept working. She was a dental assistant at the time, and kept working and just kept growing the business. I took a colored printer and I put my life story on it of who I was. I mean, I was 24 or 5 years old at the time, and started handing out these little, you know, folded up sheets of paper and with colored ink on it, and people started mm-hmm. hiring. So that's kind of how awesome. I grew the business. Yeah, it was pretty awesome. I was excited about it.
Yeah. Well, let's fast forward to today. So tell us about the current state of Emerald Companies. What does it look like? What are you into? How many locations? How many employees? Give us some of that detail.
So currently we are heavy into the snow removal. We do more snow than anything. We are in probably 4 cities. We're in the area around St. Cloud, which is St. Cloud, Sartell, Wade Park, St. Joe, Sauk Rapids. We service a lot of medical facilities. We service a hospital and surrounding area in Painesville, Minnesota. And then we also go down to Wilmer, Minnesota, where we have a second shop location. And we service Walmart and a grocery store and hospital properties down there as well. So it's grown. As far as employees go, we're probably, depending on the amount of the storm, we do some HOAs, so we have a lot of shovelers. We're probably in the 45 to 60 range, depending on the storm. If everybody was to come in a normal, you know, 1 to 2 inch storm, we're probably looking at 25 to 30 workers out there doing their jobs and doing things.
Mm-hmm. Are you doing residential work? Are you doing driveways?
No, about 5 years ago, we got out of residential. We still do about 350 homes for HOAs. I mean, you can classify those commercial or residential, but that is our next phase, is we're going to work on getting out of those. And we're going to work this summer of 2026 and then phase out of them for next winter. So we'll be free and clear of them moving forward here.
And what is your thought process behind that? Why do you want to phase out of that? What are you phasing into?
Well, we are with the HOAs. I mean, they've always been tried and true. I mean, I think I started my very first one probably when I was, you know, my 4th year in business. They've always been the insurance policy to make sure I have money to make payroll, pay my insurance and rent and everything. And with us, and one thing we've done recently in the last 5 years is moved into doing brine. And now we're 100% brine in the last 2 years. And with that and growing into these medical facilities and the quality of work that we're working on, you know, getting better, the HOAs are a lot more work than the other stuff. Some of the money that we can make on an HOA, we could probably make in a half hour at some of our other jobs because of the size of the property. So it just was kind of one of those things. You plow for 6-8 hours and you think you're done, and then you have to send the guys to another piece of equipment to go through 300 driveways, even managing it, it gets to be stressful and a lot. So what made our decision to change financially and time-wise?
Yeah. I mean, with HOA work, you know, you got to be all in or you can't dabble in it. And some companies do a great job with HOAs. You know, they're fully dedicated to the process. They're okay going to all the meetings and they have a good communication strategy. And people love those companies because they do a great job for the HOAs. But man, if you're not all in with them and if you're not set up the right way, they will eat you alive.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It'll be frustrating. We had a rule at my company, and I like to always say this whenever I can, no HOAs. So I'm on board.
We're working on it. So well, there's another company in town that does all, I think they do all HOAs. And I mean, we can't keep up.
Let them have it.
Sometimes they're done with all their jobs before we even get started. It feels so kind of embarrassing, actually. So time to be done.
Well, we're going to talk about Brian, but I also want to talk about technology. Well, let's go with the Brian first. You brought it up. Let's go there. So you said you're 100% Brian.
Yes.
How did you make that decision? And like, I'd love to have you just kind of talk about what your setup looks like with your infrastructure. You know, I've been to your facility, so I've seen all the cool stuff you have. And it's pretty cool, the investment you've made there. How you're set up, it's really impressive. So talk to us about that.
Yeah, I guess with the Brian, we started 5 years ago and we started with one unit and we bought a used Brian maker that could probably make, you know, 4 or 5, maybe 800 gallons an hour. Pretty old school stuff. We used a floating, I can't think what it's called, but to check the salinity reader. And basically from there on out, it was a lot of college and a lot of mistakes and a lot of learning from our mistakes. First year, I think we may have probably done 20,000 gallons total through the whole year. And every time was a struggle. We had valves that got left open and all of a sudden you go out to spray and the sprayer doesn't work. Just all kinds of things. But we noticed it mainly on our sidewalks. I always remember the guys would come back from doing sidewalk work and they come back and their clothes were all blue and white. And I mean, there was stuff in their shoes and the trucks were filthy because of all the salt residue. A lot of times the push cart salt spreaders stop working within the first 5 minutes that you buy a brand new one. And so they just would fling it out of a bucket. And when we switched over to Brian, it was a lot cleaner and a lot less wear and tear on the guys. They were able to finish quicker. I think it did a better job on the sidewalks. A couple customers commented that there was no tracking into their properties. I thought we were onto something. So that's kind of the direction we went. The following year, we bought some more equipment. I got visiting closely with Jordan Smith and Adam Hansen from VSI at the time. And those guys were, I mean, they amazing people, willing to give me their time. And we grew from there. They showed me some places where there was some used equipment to buy. And so at that time we bought a better brine maker. Still, it was kind of a glorified brine buddy. You could actually use your skid steer to dump into it. So we could maybe make 3,000 gallons an hour if we had a really good day. And, you know, then we were off. So we still had our salt spreaders on our trucks. We would only use them on occasion, but mainly we were spraying brine. And the third year we grew more, we bought some more sprayers. I upgraded to a larger unit, which is a VSI unit as well. And this one I could do maybe 6,000 to 8,000 gallons an hour. And that's when things took off. And we learned how important clean salt is. We learned that you shouldn't leave equipment dirty. Just a lot of different things. We learned that you mix your brine to melt snow and ice at negative 20 Fahrenheit, that when the air temperature is negative 36, it's going to break things. Just all kinds of neat stuff.
We never see those numbers here in Michigan. So I just,
Yeah, we've had a few. So I have the coldest temperature I've melted ice off of a parking lot with surface temperature of negative 17.5. Mm. And I sprayed brine on it and it was melting within 5 minutes.
That's so crazy.
Pretty exciting. So we grew pretty big. Last year, we finished our season out just under 300,000 gallons. And now this year was a big year for us. We're approaching 800,000 gallons this year as of the end of February. So,
wow, that's huge. So you mentioned Jordan Smith. I think, you know, I was just with Jordan a few weeks ago down in Dallas at Marty Grunder's Grow event. We did a snow talk together, and he was one of the panelists on there. What a great guy, and what a great resource. And right down the road from you, right? So nice and convenient.
Yep, probably about a two-hour drive, worth every minute of the drive.
For sure, yeah. So I'm just kind of curious, as you were kind of going through this, sounds like you had some good resources, some support from him and others. How involved was VSI or Jordan in kind of your decision-making process? Or were you kind of just figuring that out as you went and trying different things and then bouncing ideas off them? Or did they come in? Did Jordan come in and like set the whole thing up for you? And
No. It's funny because I actually was on the phone with Adam here about a month ago, and I said, you guys should come up and do a brine audit or a snow removal audit.
Okay.
Now I've been thinking about that. He's actually now moved on from VSI and was hired by Boss, and he's moved on from there.
Right.
Some other good stuff, but I might be able to talk those guys into coming up and kind of maybe critiquing me, but no, Adam's the only one that's been here. David, which is Jordan's partner, and Jordan answered their phones pretty much anytime I called. Adam was the same way. I bugged Adam more. I mean, you know, Adam and I would get on the phone and I remember one day we just got done plowing. I'd been up for like 30 hours and got on the phone with Adam, had a couple questions, and we talked for like 2.5 hours. It wasn't all about Brian. We talked about, you know, religion and I mean, all kinds of things. I mean, these guys are like, they're like magical. They're so friendly and kind and willing to help. And I mean, they have a passion for this. And I know Jordan's really grown and got out talking and lots of, you know, podcasts and.
Oh yeah. I see him everywhere.
And stuff. And it's just, these are the guys to listen to. So, I mean, there's other good guys out in the industry as well, but man, I learned so much from these guys. And I also learned things that I didn't listen to. And then I learned after I did it myself the hard way. So,
yeah. Well, I guess what I was trying to get to is for someone who's listening who maybe hasn't tried brine before and they're like 100% brine, that sounds insane. And they're hearing how you're set up. And can someone do this kind of on their own, or do they need someone like Adam to come alongside them and coach them or consult with them and tell them how to set it up and everything?
Well, I think that, I mean, someone could probably do this on their own without a doubt. I mean, you don't need a college degree to figure it out. But there's just so many resources, you know, YouTube is huge, podcasts, and, you know, it just, there's so much out there that you could just research, listen to it when you're, you know, mowing lawn and figure it out for the next winter. I'm not the brightest bulb on the tree, and I have definitely learned by trial and error and YouTube. I mean, it's been just, you know, best college experience I could ever get.
I think Jordan mentioned that there was a ton of resources for liquids on Boss's website too. Videos and tutorials and all kinds of stuff. I want to talk about just technology. What are some of the technology systems that you're using that you want to maybe share with others that are working well for you?
Okay.
So that could be like software or GPS or cameras or whatever.
Well, we use site cameras. Our first cameras that we ever purchased were from Frost. Really awesome. We got three from them. Mm-hmm. And then the next year we did Viasis. They're out of Canada. And we got two from them. And then this last year, I can't remember the name of it, but they're really high definition, great cameras. We've got one of them that we're trying. So we're gonna nail it all down and look at all the pictures and the information and just kind of decide, you know, which brand to stick with and go with that. The one thing I will say for Frost is their prediction and their weather forecasting. We had a rain shower come through last week and Frost nailed it. And we were out in front of the rain before the road started freezing up. So not by much, but and that's our fault, not theirs. So they predicted it and we got it done. So it was definitely beneficial.
What about just your business management systems? What are you using for software there? And are you running snow on that platform as well?
Yep. So on our summer work, we do Jobber. And then we do all of our quotes through Jobber. And then with our winter software right now, we are running site photos. We have ran Yeti in the past. Sounds like Yeti is catching up with some more of the technology and stuff. So we might look at that again this summer to see if there's anything. But there's nothing perfect out there. There's some that seem better than others. I guess the thing that I'm looking for is someone that you can call and get get your answers, you know, as soon as possible so you can actually move forward and grow. And some places do lack on that. So it's hard to expand and use all the technology that's available. Some of these things are just so robust and, you know, it's so hard to figure out how to do it all. So
what about equipment? Do you have certain types of equipment that you really prefer? Loaders, skids?
This is my favorite part. We'll start out with the champion workers, the sidewalk guys, the guys that have it harder than all of us. We run snow raiders and we run SSBs. We also have an extensive line of Kubota equipment from side-by-sides to LXs and BXs and tractors and stuff. We also have a unit, it's called a swing steer by Mag Company. I believe Bad Boys just purchased them. Pretty awesome, unique unit, does a really good job. So that's our sidewalk stuff. Anywhere from brooms, their blades. We found out that doing urethane on cutting edges over rubber or metal is by far lasts the longest. We run 1.5 inch urethane and we run it 2 inches wider on a 4-footer. So we're 4 feet, 4 inches. That way we can curb guard and bounce things and it doesn't hurt the equipment. So that's sidewalk stuff. Brine makers, we have basically between Camion and VSI. Currently we are switching every unit over to the Biasis controlling system or the Storm Commander controlling system, depending on what we were able to get our hands on. For us, it just seems easier, although we've had some issues with them, but we've definitely have had a lot of success with our brine sprayers. We've got 3, 4, 1,000 gallons. We got a 1300 gallon. We've got 4, 500 gallons, 750 and 800. We're working on a 2,300 gallon machine right now to get ready for next year. I'm finding out that it's a lot simpler than I originally started with. And we're making big strides with, you know, me being super productive. We're switching gas and electric motors out to hydraulics and running clutch pumps on our trucks. Big investment, but worth every penny of it. Our vehicles are all Ram. We run between 55 and 1500 Rams. Our sidewalk crews use 1500s with ramp racks. So the snow raiders and everything fit in the back. We have a unit that pulls a tractor around on a trailer, and that's a 1500 as well. 4-wheel drive. Inexpensive, less overhead, last long, V6s in them, good fuel economy, work great for summer and winter. We have a little brine storage by a 50 to 75 gallon brine tank in the back to fill the sidewalk units. Super efficient. We have remote sites all through our routes with brine tanks on them so we can fill tanks with that as well. We run plows. We've got our first Arctic, the new truck plow for the Arctic, which is pretty awesome. And we run a lot of snow power. We've got 3 or 4 of those. We don't do a lot of plowing with our trucks. They're mainly there for mistakes or something missed, or if we get behind to catch up that way. But yeah, we don't plow too often with those. They're there for backup. Let's see. Loaders. We run a lot of case loaders. I think we got 7 or 8 of those. We've got 5 Volvo loaders, L60s and L70s. We've got 2 John Deere loaders. We've got a Kubota 460R. We've got our John Deere's are 324s, all wheel steer, beautiful loaders. We bought a Wolf loader this year. Those are kind of new to the market. Metalplus is our favorite plow. We run as big as 1026 down to a 813. We have got 713s on some smaller tractors that we use at the HOAs. And then we also have probably 15 or 20 Arctics. And we got some 2 HD, 14-foot HDs that we use for backup in case something happens.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's pretty much everything in a nutshell. We do have 3 Salters still on hand. We just don't have them mounted on anything. Mm-hmm. Probably half a day and we'd have them switched over for some reason if something happened. So
that's a good size fleet.
Yes. Yeah.
Very blessed. What would be a cycle time for, you know, I hate to even use this word, but a typical, you know, 2-inch, 3-inch, you know, light fluffy push start to finish. What's the cycle for a complete, you know, brine run?
Complete brine run. If everything's working, that's saying a lot there. But if everything's working and all the trucks are spraying and everybody shows up, we could probably get our brine all sprayed out in 4 hours. And I think in our southern location, Wilmer area, they could probably do it about 2.5 hours.
Good.
Plowing, I would say a typical 2 to 3 inch storm. Wilmer, I think they make their circle a lot quicker, mm-hmm. little denser routes and stuff, but 2 to 4 hours. We're probably more like 6 to 8 hours on our cycles.
Okay. Okay.
Out here in South area.
Okay. It's not unreasonable.
We would always be like, we'd like to be at quicker sidewalks. We're shooting for 4 hours, but we're running about 6 back to the drawing board for next year.
Well, once you dump those HOAs, you'll speed up. So
matter of fact, yes.
Are you subcontracting work? Are you working as a sub?
We work for a couple national companies. I guess, I don't know if that's considered a sub or not, but mm-hmm. I think we have 2 subs, one or a couple guys will haul snow for us with dump trucks. One guy will plow. And then we have another guy that has 2 sites for us. So I'd say we're probably a maybe 2% mix of subcontractors, okay. but very little. Okay. I really love myself to perform.
Yeah. Good for you. Good for you. Tell me about your thoughts about getting involved in the industry. I know you attend all the SIMA events that you can get to, and you go to Snowfighters whenever you can. What have you learned from that? What value have you gotten from those relationships, and how important is that to your business?
It is massively important. Basically, I've always done SIMA. I think I've been a member of SIMA for almost 20 years, or not, if not more. The mingling, the seeing the equipment. I remember my first SIMA that was in Minneapolis, and Arctic was there. I mean, I was like, no way, that thing looks stupid. And now look at them. And I mean, the plows are amazing. And that was a long time ago. Since in the last 3-4 years, I started doing Snowfighters Institute, and that's how I reached out to you. I was out mowing a lawn and I was looking for podcasts, and your podcast showed up, and I mean, I binge listened to it for like a week and got through every single one of them. And then I started looking up for education, and I went to every class that you offered that first year in 2024. And I think I started out in Michigan and ended up over at Storks in Pennsylvania. It's almost, and I, you know, forgive me if I say this wrong, but it's almost like crack. You just can't get enough of it. And it's just so exciting, and there's just so much to learn. And I mean, you talk to a guy out east and you talk to a guy in the Midwest or in Colorado, and I mean, it's like a whole different country or world. I mean, it's just the way they do things or the type of snow they get. And I went out and helped out in Virginia this past year, plow some snow. I mean, the conditions that I experienced out there, I've never experienced in my life. You know, you think about, you know, just the geographical changes and the mountain ranges and how that changes the snow and the density and stuff. But along with these classes, I mean, you learn a lot of stuff, and I recommend that. I mean, without a doubt, I highly recommend it. You know, get your butt out to the classes and learn, get to these seminars, podcasts, YouTube. I mean, there's just so many good things out there.
Yeah, whatever you can do, because, you know, you can't always get to all the in-person events, but there's so much online and available. But I'm with you. I love meeting new people and seeing there's always really interesting people that I'm running into. You know, I didn't know Gene Storks until a few years ago. And, you know, now I've been out to his facility a few times. In fact, we're recording on February 27th, this podcast right here. But he just announced registrations open for Snow Alliance, his event, Gene Storks' big event in Pennsylvania, just yesterday. Top of mind. But that's a great event. Another great industry event.
24th, right?
Yeah. And no, 24th, April. And I think you're aware we're doing Grow Snow this year in Dayton, Ohio. And that'll be a cool industry event coming online. But you're also involved in a peer group. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, a peer group. We've got 3 guys from the Midwest, from Chicago, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And we've got 2 guys from out east. And we get together once a month. Absolutely look forward to it. From the time we get off the Zoom call to the next time, I look forward to it. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing to hear, you know, some of the stuff they have to say and the questions that we have. I was able to, you know, help a couple of the guys with some Brian questions, and, you know, they were able to help me some routing questions. We all kind of learned a little bit more about Dinesh leasing and just other mm-hmm. equipment stuff. And there was a gentleman on the most recent one that talked about how his guys love his John Deere loaders versus the other loaders. And, you mm-hmm. know, it's just stuff that you don't normally want here. And it's just kind of a nice peer group to visit and learn. And I wish they had just gotten done with a huge storm out east, and I wish I could have volunteered to gone mm-hmm. out there and play, or not play. I mean, worked for them. But yeah, it's good to know people from all over, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's again, I look forward to that monthly Zoom call the whole month. So,
yeah. Well, I'm kind of building a list as we're talking here about, you know, things that you've done in your career that have helped you get to where you are in the industry. And, you know, for the benefit of everyone who's listening, maybe there's some people listening to this podcast that are thinking, man, I'd love to chat it up with Joel and get to know him a little bit. Would you be open to hearing from some folks if they wanted to reach out to you?
Yes, absolutely. I'd love to.
What's your website?
Website is myemeraldlawn.com. That's my, okay, as an M-Y, emeraldlawn.com.
And then what's your email?
Email would be joel@myemeraldlawn.com.
There you go. Perfect. All right. Awesome. Well, thank you for doing that. What else would you pass along to someone who's kind of newer in the industry? What kind of advice do you have for someone who's, you know, just starting out?
I guess a couple of things. No matter how bad your day is, there's blessings and there's things to be thankful for. You could be running a truck and the tranny goes out and then that's thousands of dollars of repairs, but I mean, you know, you got that truck to repair. I mean, a lot of people don't have that. The education portion, I mean, just listen, keep your ears open. I always like listening to music and stuff in my headphones or in my truck, and especially, you know, you've been out for 10, 20 hours and you want to hear some jamming and stuff, but I always, every day, have a podcast on, I have YouTube on, listen to whatever. I listen to this Stefano guy out of Sault Ste. Marie, Canada, and I listen to Mike Gandy's, and I listen to other podcasts, and there's just so many valuable things out there, and I mean, just keep a positive attitude and listen to stuff. Pick up something from somebody. Nobody smarter than anybody else.
Yeah, love that. What are you most proud of in your career so far?
I'm alive. No,
well, you've made it.
Yes. Well, it's funny how I'm 54 years old, and it's funny how I remember when I first got started, I was going to be the biggest, and I did everything I could to be the biggest company in town. And I don't know if I am or if I'm not. It doesn't matter anymore. Things change. Mm-hmm. Then there was a phase that I went through where everything has to be fancy and shiny and bigger and better. And it doesn't matter anymore. It's just so weird. I mean, the biggest thing now is that I do a good job, that I can get good feedback from my customers, and they share that they like working with Emerald and you should give them a shot. I mean, that's like the most exciting thing that I can ever. I love when I get a phone call and says, yeah, so-and-so referred me. It's like, that's like goosebumps right there. So it's like a pretty girl looking at you. It's like, my gosh, she noticed me. So
yeah, no, it's good perspective. It's really, and it's a outward customer centric perspective versus self-centered, versus your ego and, you know, that kind of thing. So I love that perspective. Is there anything else you want to share before we wrap things up?
I think we touched on most everything. Again, a little bit more advice. I mean, if you see a competitor driving down the road, wave at him. Doesn't matter if he waves back to you. Keep a positive outlook. Give thanks for everything you have, even if you're not happy, because it'll turn you into happy. And listen to what's out there. There's so many resources and all kinds of great stuff. I just can't emphasize that enough.
Yeah, awesome. Joel, thank you so much for being here. I know you're a busy person and taking a little bit of time out to share with us. So again, thank you for being here. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's definitely an honor.
Thanks for listening to the Snowfighters Institute podcast. Subscribe so you don't miss future episodes, and check out our upcoming events at snowfightersinstitute.com.